Fat Chance by Roy Trumbull, copyright 2009, Chapter 13, Class Time. A resort south of Phoenix, Arizona, near Casa Grande, built during the time when tech stocks were blasting past Pluto, had been through a number of owners. The original concept was meeting rooms and accommodations for business seminars, for which a princely daily rate would be charged. Before the golf course and tennis courts were finished, the business plan was kaput. Even with lower rates, they couldn't attract enough clients and were soon behind in their mortgage payments. Now, with a humbler business plan and a recent cash infusion, the resort was now styled the Casa Gabacho. Parked in their lot was a typical highway tourist bus. Inside one of the meeting rooms, wearing shorts and gaudy shirts and doing their best to look like company stalwarts at a planning meeting, were the students who'd recently departed Johnson's Accounting on West Shicker. Today the subject was American culture, and the presenters were Christy Elegance and Ed Coli. They had a portable holographic radiator for HoloPoint presentations. Mr. Spaghetti had tried to make HoloPoint stick, but everyone called them Holies instead. Some used a three-letter prefix before Holies. The images could be made to spin, flip, and genuflect. The speaker used a hot dog-sized control wand with built-in pointer. Being yellow, it was called a banana squirter. By pressing a button, a spoken phrase could be texted and embedded within the hologram being displayed. This was considered far cooler than animated arrows and underlining from days of yore. The program was under the auspices of the widely advertised University of Truckee. The presenters had various qualifications, the most important of which was that they were out of work and needed a job, and therefore couldn't be too picky about salary. A few had actually been teachers, but the rest had just enough chutzpah to make presentations. The University of Truckee had started at a Sierra storefront used for kipping by a bunch of college students who couldn't pay the going rate for lodgings at Squaw Valley and Donner Summit. Then a ruse was needed to convince parents paying big education bucks that a trip to California involved academic work. In their real life, several of the founding grad students had campus jobs that involved hammering out articulation agreements. They knew all the right buttons to push. UOT was thus created and looked as legit on paper as any other young adult daycare center in the country. Some of the letterhead names actually had advanced degrees. The others, at least, had multiple degrees from a variety of diploma mills. Even after the fish odor was detected, many big-name colleges that had recognized UOT felt that backing away would cause a major embarrassment. Rather than remain in a tenuous condition, UOT did the only thing they could do: expand. There was hardly a vacant office building in the 11 western states that hadn't hosted a UOT class. The curriculum was frozen into sets of lecture binders, class notes, and tests. The main campus remained at the original storefront in Truckee between a bait shop and a western wear store. The founders still reserved the right to kip there during ski trips. Christy Elegance was a perky young thing with a vacuous stare. She had all the makings of a future real estate lady. A major part of her income went to hair maintenance. She followed the East Coast rule of hair coloring, which was never to let your part turn natural. The West Coast was more relaxed about such things, as no one believed anyone was a blonde, unless they were traveling on a Scandinavian passport. Christy was also a slave to the rag trade, a true designer label whore. Today she had a yellow top with extended shoulders, a black skirt, and yellow stockings. She looked like a yellow jacket in search of fresh meat. Ed Coli wore shoulder-length black hair, which didn't seem to be any more natural than Christy's blonde. He had on an acid-washed denim suit and a shirt with seersucker stripes. He looked like he might have made his last car payment by check kiting. His was not an occupation that oozed millions. About as good as it got for him was when he found a family-style buffet for dinner. 2 weeks ago, he'd had a gig in Boise, Idaho. If there was a gay bar there, he hadn't found it. He'd wanted to do stand-up, but the closest he'd gotten to it was inserting his lame jokes into presentations. All would have coasted right along, Christy and Ed reading off their graphics, the waiters refilling the coffee urns at regular intervals, the nibble table supplied and resupplied with muffins and cookies, and the supplicant suppressing yawns. Just one thing was wrong. When Ed opened the back of the lecture binder to extract the dime chip and put it into the slot on the projector, the number on the chip and the number on the binder pocket were different. It was a true WTF moment. Ed punched through the first few images so he could see what they were. Damn, it looked like vacation photos from Las Vegas with a day trip to Hoover Dam. Obviously out of someone's camera. Christy was over getting coffee. Ed pulled her out into the hall and explained the problem. "Can't we just cancel?" she said. He gave her a look of horror. "No, I ain't going back to selling Kirby's in Bakersfield. We're going to tap dance." "Tap dance?" "Yes, we're going to fake it. The dime chip for the afternoon is the right one. Now just blink your pretty eyes, let your mini skirt ride up and move those hips for all they're worth. We're going to need all the distraction we can muster." The morning was spent explaining America's fascination with gambling. The holographic images taken inside the casinos were so good you could almost smell the cigarette smoke. Ed had once flunked out of a probability class, but remembered just enough to touch on odds and the fact that the casinos took an edge. For the players, it was a gamble, but for the casino, it was always a sure thing. As long as they could bus in enough hags who played three slots at once, they were in fine shape. There were a number of images of the casinos as seen from without. Many took the form of famous buildings or struck a particular style, but in reality they were little more than theme parks for slot machines. The only thing truly original about Vegas was speed bumps. They'd been invented there long ago to keep speeding cab drivers from killing the rubes. The next time you read about some outrageous crime, burrow down into the account and find out if the perpetrator had ever driven cab in Vegas. Christy was thankful there wasn't any text. The course designers crowded too much of it into each image anyway. It couldn't be read past the second row. Anyway, Christy's contacts were giving her fits. She'd forgotten her eye drops. Whenever Ed faltered, Christy flipped madly through her note binder and tossed out non sequiturs about Lincoln Center or Disney World as Ed punched through shots of Caesar's Palace. Just about the time he got to the replica of Michelangelo's statue of David, sans fig leaf, she was blathering on about the Liberace Museum in Vegas. Their audience sat stunned. The waiters had to come and go quickly since they were having a hard time suppressing laughs.